Welcome back for the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc., a holiday movie review with Brian Godawa. We still have to talk about Master and Commander, Love Actually, and then there are a few I'd like to talk about that have recently come out and one about to come out. I want to talk about Kill Bill and The Return of the King. 1 week? Is that it? 1 week until the third in the trilogy of the Ring trilogy comes out. Speaking of the holidays, did you see the St. Louis Post-Dispatch Everyday section today? Children's books are gifts to share again and again and again. That is true. You will not find on the list of holiday books there in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, however, one that I would recommend being our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, St. Nicholas, the real story of the Christmas legend. It tells the story of the real St. Nicholas without any holiday embellishment. And it's a story worth hearing and telling your children and your grandchildren. The book is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. You can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. You can also order the book. Oh, by the way, when you get to our website, click on the What's New section. You'll find the book there. Also, you can order the book from Concordia Publishing House. It's a great Christmas gift for you, your children, your grandchildren. I just gave it to my son, just for the heck of it. We'll read it tonight. Called St. Nicholas, it's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December. Concordia Publishing House, their number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. They also have two locations here in St. Louis. One is in Clayton on the campus of Concordia Seminary, 801 DeMunn, if you're looking for the address. Just follow the signs. The other at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. When you call, when you write, when you go in, mention Issues Etc. The book is called St. Nicholas, The Real Story of the Christmas Legend. Now, if you'd like to get a free copy of Brian Godawa's book, Hollywood Worldviews, give us a call in the next 20 minutes, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Master and Commander, Brian, I haven't heard anything bad about this film, and I'll tell you from the trailers I've seen in watching the other films, that from the trailers of this thing, it looks amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I would really recommend it. It's a great film, and it's a great historical action story. It's not true, but it's based on well-researched, basically good research, you know, based on actually a series of novels written by, I think, Patrick O'Brien. But anyway, it's the story of a British naval commander by the name of Captain Jack Aubrey, played by Russell Crowe. And he's on an English ship in the seas during the, I don't know the time period. Well, it would be probably around early 1800s, because it's before 1860, that's for sure. And maybe even earlier. But anyway, he's the head of a English ship that's supposed to sort of watch the seas for French ships, and in particular one called the Acheron, which is a French warship that is going around and plundering merchants and stuff. So they're out there on the ocean trying to basically, they're like police of the sea, trying to protect people and the like. And what happens is they get surprised one day by the Acheron, and they get attacked and they get crippled as a ship. And the Acheron is a more modern ship with newer, more cannons and everything. It's a little bit better. But the ship that Russell Crowe is on, I forgot what the name of it was called. I think it's called I can't remember. Anyway, his ship then is crippled, but he decides to go ahead and try and fix the ship on sea while they're chasing down this French ship. And it's a really exciting movie, and it's all about friendship, but also courage, a lot about courage, honor, nobility, that kind of stuff. Really great epic-type themes evolved in it. But I think even more importantly, it's got a really great theme as they contrast. Russell Crowe's character has a good friend on board. He's the doctor, and the doctor's Stephen Maturin. And he's a naturalist, a man of science, and a medical man. And this movie is a comparison and contrast of these two worldviews, how the military worldview of Jack versus the sort of the scientific worldview of the naturalist with him, and how those two compete to take over the world. And really, it's really a sort of tale of modernism, how the man of science ultimately influences the man of war, and the man of war is more from the old ways, you know, it's power, will, and that kind of stuff. The man of science helps bring balance into Jack's life. by helping him to see the beauty and the, what shall we say, the better side of men's, the angelic side of men's natures or whatever, and also appreciating nature and stuff, because military power tends to be, you know, tends to see the world, the military world really tends to see the world only in terms of everything is usable for its means of power and control. And, of course, the man of science helps bring balance to that. So it's a great film, you know, 4 stars. You know, I would recommend it. My only qualification would be the interesting thing is that they make a man of science, and there's a precursor to evolution in here, too. They sort of bring in the evolutionary mindset. But they try to show the man of science as being the ultimate balance to the man of war or the man of military. What they fail to recognize, again, is they ignore the spiritual side altogether. And ironically, really, it's the scientific worldview that through modernism that has brought about the worst murder and genocide in all of history in the 20th century. So what they fail to really bring a point about is it's not science that it's not the scientific worldview that balances military with compassion or understanding. It's really the spiritual side of man, because technology and science can be used for good or evil, and as the 20th century is a perfect example of that. And so, unfortunately, that would be my only concern about the film, is that it lacks in showing that the real balance with the military worldview is the spiritual view of compassion, not science. But nonetheless, it does bring up some really good points in its criticisms.
Our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with some of our listeners. Craig is calling from Park Hills. Craig, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, guys. I'm really enjoying the conversation that you're having, but there's one movie that I've been dying to see for quite a while, and I'm wondering if it's ever going to be released to video. And, Brian, you might be familiar with it since you're the one that wrote the screenplay. I was wondering when your movie is going to come out.
Talking, of course, about To End All Wars, Brian.
Well, it should definitely be out on video by sometime around April, and we're hoping to have still a minor theatrical release before that in the next few months. Pray for it if you know anything about it. To End All Wars stars Kiefer Sutherland and Robert Carlyle. It's a true story about, and it's an East meets West movie, but it's about these Allied prisoners of war and a true story of their suffering under the Japanese in World War II. But there's been a lot of trouble getting distribution for the film, and the producer is probably going to write an article soon about the nature of understanding spiritual warfare, because he's been trying to get this movie distributed for several years, and he has encountered such spiritual warfare that you would not believe. He's hopefully going to be writing an article on it soon, but that's all I know about it at this point.
Linda's on the line calling from her car. Linda, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. I picked up a DVD for my grandchildren. They're 2 and 5. We've not been at home, and we've been sending packages. And I went through the line at Walmart, and I think it was 8 Days of Christmas. I think it's the name of it. But anyway, it was supposed to be this guy, kind of a Scrooge type. But when you put it on, the man belches, and then he uses the one of your fingers that you shouldn't use, and pulls on a male garment that, and just really bad. And my daughter looked at me and she said, "Mom, this just isn't for." And I said, "No, it's not." And you try to take it back, and then you're stuck with it. But yeah, it's not what you want your small children to watch.
Linda, thank you. Stay on hold, Linda. I'd like to send you a copy of Brian Godawa's book, Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Movies with Wisdom and Discernment. My producer will connect with you here in just a second. Boy, I tell you what, just because it says a kid's movie or is billed as a kid's movie doesn't necessarily mean it is.
Yeah, right? Unfortunately.
Another one that's coming out, Bad Santa, is definitely, at least from what I could tell, not holiday nor children's fair.
No, not at all. I haven't seen it, but it's a very grotesque, you know, rancid film, moral film from all the evidence I've seen.
I think it will get watched because the late John Ritter has a part in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Billy Bob Thornton is a great actor, you know.
And
I'm not against doing dark movies or black comedy or black humor, you know, and sort of desecrating, there's another side of it that I would bring up. You know, desecrating, images of society sometimes they need to be desecrated. And, you know, if you think about it, my argument against the whole Santa thing is, you know, in and of itself, Santa Claus, the Santa Claus mythology does not bother me. What bothers me is that it really has been developed through time to be a diversion from the true meaning of Christmas, and it becomes a cover over that. And for that reason, I detest it, you know. Not that I wouldn't, you know, not that there's an, there could be an appropriate way of dealing with it as long as you show that it points to the real meaning in some way. But if you ignore God altogether, it's a bad symbol. And in that sense, I wouldn't mind desecrating the Santa image because it really is, you know, an image that diverts us from the true meaning, or it can divert us. It all depends, you know. So I'm not against that in principle, but it's just from what I heard, it's pretty vile language and vile comments. And unfortunately, most people think movies about Santas might be something they can take their kids to, so it's sort of confusing in that sense.
Brian Godawa is our guest. Love Actually is a film that my mom has seen this film. She and my dad went to see it, and she just thought, what a lovely little movie. I heard one review that said, this is basically Harry Met Sally times 7.
Yeah.
Tell us about the film.
Actually, I think there's 8 stories. But, yeah, it's really an English, you know, love comedy, broad love comedy. And I usually enjoy those. You know, I think they're very, very interesting characters, as in this film. And it's basically, you know, about 7 different stories of different people who are struggling with love in Christmas, basically during Christmas, and how they deal with it. And it all takes place in, I think, in England or at least London or something. And so, you know, you've got these 7 different interesting stories, and it really is rather interesting, well told, and it's got some good values. And the central themes are that love is all around us and that we must communicate our love to one another or we'll suffer in unnecessary misery. And it even makes a reference to 9/11 in the voiceover in the beginning to sort of bring a positive note in a post-9/11 world, you know, and the idea of seeing that love is all around us, even in a even though we might see the world in bad ways.
But is the movie about love?
My argument is that it ultimately isn't. Unfortunately, I only liked about 3 of the 7 or 8 stories, and because of that, I don't recommend it. If I would have liked 4 to 5 of the stories, I would recommend it because it's not a perfect world, and some stories don't end up how they should be, and particularly if you're doing multiple storylines, that would be fine. But unfortunately, most of them are all pretty much about lust, actually, and, you know, characters are not very desirable. They make the wrong choices, and it's portrayed as being the right choice. For example, you know, there's a good story where Colin Firth is a married man. I love Colin Firth as an Englishman in these English movies. He plays a married man who discovers his wife is committing adultery and so with his brother. So he moves out to the country to write a book and get away from it. And, you know, you presume he's left his wife, which is good, and that's fine. And then he has a maid, I think a Portuguese maid, come and clean up for him. And he ends up falling in love with her. And what's really clever about the movie is they can't speak the same language, but they're trying to communicate to each other. And they don't know what each other is saying, but it just so happens through subtitles we see that they actually think the same way and speak about the same things without knowing it, which shows that they have a real kinship of spirit. And this is a wonderful notion of love and finding your kindred spirit and all that. And that's a great story. But then some negative stories would be, you know, there's a story of a, let's see, what would be the negative version? I'm trying to think of the different. Oh, you know, there's 2 actors who are playing stand-ins for porn movies, which means they sort of stand in the scene and, you know, sort of just so that cameramen can get their camera, lighting guys can get the lighting done, you know, that kind of a thing. And so they're just sort of standing there faking sex acts just for the sake of getting all the camera work all set for the real people. And meanwhile, they're getting to know each other and they fall in love with each other as well. And in my opinion, it's a very, very clever and original idea, but unfortunately it's very appropriate and gratuitous and exploitative in that sense. And so that would be an example of a love story that I would consider more of a lust story. And unfortunately there's more of those than there are love stories in the movie.
All right, there are two films. One will be a holiday film because it's coming out in 1 week, being The Return of the King, that I want to get to before we're done. But I do have to talk about, you and I share some bit of kind of ambivalent mixed admiration for Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
His latest film, part one of a 2-part film, that is his first film in, what, 6 years or something like this.
Yeah.
Kill Bill, you write in your blog in large letters at the beginning of your review, not recommended. Tell us about the film.
Yeah, you're right. I do. I have a very mixed recommendation of Quentin Tarantino, but as time goes on, it gets worse and worse because I think he's. I cannot not recommend this movie enough. You know, basically, it's a revenge story about a woman, played by Uma Thurman, who was on the verge of, actually, on her wedding day, all of her wedding party and her husband, and she gets killed. But it turns out she doesn't get killed. She survives just barely. And then when she comes to, she goes on a vendetta of tracking down the head guy and all his assistant killers who killed the people as basically revenge. And that's basically what the story is. And the story is basically nonstop fight scenes of revenge interspersed with 1970s type, scorecards of, you know, like 60 months later, 3 months later, 5 months later, you know. Quentin Tarantino likes to, you know, paint his pictures in sort of old, you know, B-movie or 70s type TV show stuff. And it worked in Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction I consider a masterpiece, but I think it's an accidental masterpiece, and I can explain that later. But Kill Bill is basically just a revenge fest of blood and gore, and he's trying to give some homage to the chop socky Japanese films. And the gore is like Monty Python type gore sometimes, where it's deliberately excessive. But you know what? It's just excessive, exploitative, and it's really without. I saw no redemption in the film myself, and I usually try to say as much as I can that I like about a movie, because movies are all mixed bags. This movie, though, was so negative to me that there's very little I could say I liked about it, other than the camera work was fascinating, great, you know, great visuals, and you know, great style in that sense. But beyond that, I really couldn't recommend it at all.
I'm wondering two things about the film. First of all, how's it going to come out in part two? I mean, neither of us can answer that question. But also, how can Tarantino top himself after this movie? It is it's so over the top and so morosely dark in its outlook and its worldview. It seems difficult unless he's going to start making cartoons or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, what made Pulp Fiction a masterpiece, in my opinion, was he took the pastiche of postmodern filmmaking and worldview, but he captured it really well. And but what he did was he had Christian redemption brought into it. Very clearly a Christian notion of redemption. It's not theologically perfect, but it was, in my opinion, strong enough to say there's a redemptive spiritual element in this movie. Unfortunately, I think that he just did that because he thought it would be a bizarre. You know, he does all these freakish things, and he thought, wouldn't it be freakish to have this Christian type idea in this film? Not that he believes in it, but because he draws from all his bad TV love for bad TV and B movies, and he just thought that would be a funny pastiche way of adding to the film. Well, it really brought it to depth that made it become a masterpiece. But in all of his subsequent films and even his previous ones, it's really a dark nihilistic worldview without really any true redemption, and I wouldn't recommend his films.
Okay, two more things in the few minutes that are left to us. What are your expectations for the return of the King? We've already mentioned it's over-merchandised, but the film itself.
Well, you know, first of all, I do want to just quickly say that this movie, Kill Bill, was so bad that I'm not even going to see the sequel out of curiosity as a film critic. I hope I stick to that because I have no interest in doing so. But usually even a bad movie I'm interested in seeing to the end, but not that one. But regarding Return of the King, you know, I'm just like everyone else, I'm excited to see it. I'll see it the second day it opens. In fact, this Sunday, good friends of ours are going to come over. We're going to watch the two extended versions on video for like 6.5 hours at home in preparation to go see the Return of the King. And, you know, a lot of high hopes. I actually know friends who've seen it already, and some of them have said it's the best of all three. Not only that, but they say that whereas the book, the third book, original book, was not as good as the first books, they say that the movie is better than the first two movies. And if that's true, then we've got a wrap up here that is sure to win some Oscars. I mean, it better.
Have you seen Mel Gibson's Passion yet?
I have. I was one of the blessed ones to do so. And let me tell you, every Christian, no matter what denomination you are, better get behind this movie and make it a blockbuster. If you want your voice in Hollywood to be heard, folks, this is one of the times, also when To End All Wars comes out, but this is one of the times that you vote with your dollar and show them what you want to see. Mel Gibson is releasing it himself because he, quite frankly, he probably can't trust studios to not, you know, rape it or to do something bad to its sacredness. This film captures the suffering of Christ and communicates the power of redemption in a more powerful way than any other Jesus movie I've ever seen, because he brings flesh and blood, and I mean that in a bad way too, both good and bad. He brings the flesh and blood to the concept of, in Isaiah, where it talks about how he was wounded, he was crushed for our sins, he was wounded for our transgressions, and the chastening of his well-being, of our well-being, fell upon him. You know, Christ became sin on our behalf and bore sin in his body on the cross. Well, that this movie really communicates that, and people, you have to see it, even though it might be rated R, it captures the power of redemption better than any other Jesus movie I personally have ever seen.
Finally, with a minute, as a filmgoer, there is the obvious question, since it is a graphic film,
yes,
and has an R rating, whether or not it's in any way suitable for kids.
Well, you know, they're trying to get a PG-13. They're in the process right now. It's difficult for me to believe that they will, but it's possible considering the fact that it's such a well-known, you know, true historical event and all that, and people have seen tons of movies anyway. But they're going to try. I don't think it will be able to, but I think this would be a perfect example of showing why they're, just like the Bible is rated R, and the Bible shows some very graphic scenes, and it has some graphic theology, very graphic descriptive theology of the meaning of blood atonement and what Christ did for us. The Bible is rated R in many different places, as we've talked about before, and this would be a perfect example of a movie that captures that reality and recognizes that it may not be for kids, and that's okay, but it's definitely for adults, and it's definitely for 17 and over, and maybe some of you parents might actually be able to bring your kids, considering their background and understanding. And in today's postmodern world where kids worship violence and do these video games of killing people, I think they might be very interested in seeing this movie in a way that they wouldn't be interested in seeing the other Jesus movies, in a twisted way, but nonetheless, it'll bring them into the truth and show them the truth of the ultimate victimization of God himself.
Brian Gadawa, thank you for being our guest again on Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Folks, when you go online tonight, check out Brian's website, Gadawa.com, G-O-D-A-W-A.com. You'll find a number of movie reviews by Brian on that website. He's a screenwriter in Southern California, author of the book Hollywood Worldviews. Tomorrow on the program, Gay Marriage, Dr. Bob Weiss joins us here in Studio A to talk about that and the impact of 50 years of Playboy magazine. Reed Mercer Stuckart, author of the cover story in Christianity Today, Hugh Hefner's Hollow Victory, tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.